Well, hey, if you want something new in 2017, you're going to have to try something new in 2017. That's kind of what we're looking at as we're in this new series, I'm Possible. And I'm really excited about this series because I think it's a clarifier for us as we head into and begin this new year. You know, in the sense of that, what that song says, you know, do I want to be like everybody else? Do I want to have everybody else's stuff and gig? Or do I have something else I'm going after? You know, as we head into 2017, do I want what I know, you know, which is the possible because I already know it, or do I want to, you know, go to places that I don't yet know, which seems like the impossible, and yet, with some changes, some small changes even, becomes the possible. So let's go ahead and pray before we start into this today. Heavenly Father, thank you for every single person that's gathered in this dark room on a Sunday morning, because in some way, shape, or form, we are wanting to explore, connect with you. God, I pray that what we do today in here would not only be honoring of you, but it would be helpful and beneficial to us. And God, that we would walk out of here today, you know, with you would send us out even into a new world with a new life and a new perspective. And so, God, I just pray that you would help the words I prepared to be helpful. And I would pray these things according to your name, your character, the character of Jesus. Amen. Well, hey, welcome to Crosspoint, by the way. My name's Kurt. It's great to have you here. And if you're here for the very first time, man, we just are so excited you've chosen to join us on this really second weekend that we've been going of the year. And, it's exciting because there's this theme throughout the Bible as we think about the impossible of doing things beyond what seems possible. Jesus is kind of building into this on a regular basis. In fact, in the book of Mark, chapter 9, he's interacting with a father, and this is a dad who has a son who has some major issues going on in his life, not the least of which are that he's deaf and mute. And so Jesus says to him, all things are possible for one who believes. All things are possible for one who believes. You know, why would we come into a place like this, a dark room on a Sunday morning, a church, you know, to start 2017, second week, third weekend of the year? Why do we come into a place like this? You know, I don't think it's because there's some, you know, religious, cultural obligation to go to church today. We lost that years ago. I think for many of us, it's because, you know, we want to pursue what seems like the impossible. We want to go after that next thing. We say, I don't just want what I know, but we want more out of life. And Jesus encourages this kind of stuff. Jesus is constantly saying, look beyond, look to the things beyond what you think is actually possible. In fact, movies today, they're movies that capture our imagination, and they're usually movies that tap into doing the impossible, right? There's a number of them that have been out over the last few weeks. How about Star Wars? Anybody see the latest rendition of Star Wars? How about this? How many of you are not an American and have not yet seen the movie, just out of curiosity? Oh, my word, you need to become an American, all right? Go to the movie. You know, it's about going after this thing that's impossible. I saw the absolute best movie, I kid you not, that I've seen in years last weekend. My wife went and saw it Saturday. She said, you got to take our daughter. So I took our oldest daughter to go see it. It's a movie by the name of Hidden Figures. Anybody seen Hidden Figures? Holy, yeah, you can clap for that. Man, that is, you need to go see this week. I mean, we usually don't champion movies. Jesus could teach this movie, all right? I mean, this like falls right in line with what the life of Jesus is about. I mean, you got these three ladies who are Katherine Johnson, Dorothy Vaughan, and Mary Jackson, and it's the true story, the basically untold true story of these three brilliant African-American women who are the brains behind one of America's greatest operations in history, the launch or the continuation, really, of the space program, getting John Glenn up into orbit and then safely returning him to Earth. And it's just a stunning achievement, and they're a part of it, and they inspire us to do the things that seem impossible. In fact, here's a short little clip from the movie.
You know what we're doing here? We're putting a human on top of a missile, shooting him into space, and it's never been done before. I need a mathematician that can look beyond the numbers. Math that doesn't yet exist.
Oh, man. Doesn't that get you excited? Like, you know, it doesn't matter if you like math or not, right? Going after something that doesn't yet exist. This visionary trio, they crossed gender and racial lines, and they inspired our country. They inspired our country to go after what seemed impossible. That's what this dad is doing, right? He wants his child to be healed, and he says to Jesus, I believe, help my unbelief, which is really fascinating to me that he says this. Because, you know, so many times we look at the Bible, and this is one of the reasons I have so much confidence in the Bible, really. Because, you know, so many times the Bible doesn't paint for us stories of people that have this perfect spiritual language. I mean, you'd think this dude would be going, oh, I believe, I'm totally with, I totally believe you can do it, Jesus. You know what he's saying? It's more like this. I believe, Jesus, help my unbelief. See, for you to be different in 2017, you're going to have just enough belief to recognize that you need more belief. For you to be closer to God, you're going to have just enough faith to realize you actually need more faith in God. You know, for you to have a life of more power, you know, more of God's presence in your life, you're going to have just enough spiritual grounding to realize I need more spiritual grounding. See, when you look at the greats throughout the Bible, you know, those who do the impossible, these are things that they leverage over and over and over again. And so one of the ones I want to look at today is a guy by the name of Daniel. Daniel is a guy from the Old Testament, way before Jesus came on the scene. And we don't know much about Daniel. You know, we know his name. You may have heard about him. But he's really baked into the fabric of American culture in a lot of ways. But one of the ways is that we still call people Daniel, right? I mean, there's maybe some of you in this room that are called Daniel. And you know, that was a name that comes from over a millennia ago. Now, just because the name shows up doesn't mean we're still calling our kids that, right? I mean, like, I don't think you've met anybody recently named Nebuchadnezzar, right? Just out of curiosity. And yet, Daniel, because of his identity, because of his character, because he goes after the impossible, you know, we're drawn to this and we like the name Daniel. And so when we think about doing the impossible, I want us to take some cues from Daniel's life. Three things we're going to look at today. Number one, we have to know the one true God. We have to know, we have to move closer and closer to the one true God. See, Daniel's a Jew, and he's living in a part of the world that's becoming overrun by the nation of Babylon. So the Babylonians are this world power, and they're taking over, you know, all these different cultures and regions and little villages, and they're incredibly smart. What they do is they go into a village, and they say, who are the brightest and the best? And they kind of farm them out, and they put them in this leadership mentoring program, and they begin to mentor them as they take over that particular culture. And so Daniel is one of those people who's the brightest, one of the best, and he's put into this mentoring program, and he's put into this kind of spiritual, you know, line, the spiritual study development line, where they're kind of interpreting the stars and what the stars say about reality and how we interpret what God's saying to us. And so the king over Babylon at the time is a guy by King Nebuchadnezzar, and he has this dream. And he's really troubled by the dream. Now, this isn't like he had Pizza King the night before, you know, and it's gurgling in his stomach, and he's like, oh, I had some bad dreams because I was sleeping with pizza. It's not that dream. It's like, this is a dream that he knows, gosh, God's saying something here. I need to get some interpretation on this. And so he knows there's these Chaldeans, these spiritual, you know, kind of interpreters of the stars, and Daniel's a part of this group, and he goes to them, and he says something fascinating. He says, instead of telling them the dream and asking them to interpret it, he says, you know, if you're so spiritual as you say that you are, why don't you tell me what my dream was and then interpret it? Well, the Chaldeans, they've never heard anything like this before. So here's what happens. It says, the Chaldeans answered the king and said, there is not a man on earth who can meet the king's demand, for no great and powerful king has asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or Chaldean. Man, I love what Nebuchadnezzar does right here. I mean, he actually calls their bluff, right? He's like, ah, if you're really spiritual, then you'll know what my dream is. And I mean, this is awesome, right? Because I mean, there is so much spirituality floating around in our culture today. I mean, the bluff needs to be called every now and then, right? People are like, oh, well, God told me this. Well, how do you know? How do you know? I mean, how can you verify that? Every now and then somebody will be like, oh, God told me, Kurt, that this is what you need to do. Really? Why didn't he tell me? I mean, usually God tells the person, right? I mean, there's so much of this stuff going on. King Nebuchadnezzar says, tell me the dream. And they're like, nobody can tell you the dream. He's like, I knew it. I knew you guys were phonies. Eliminate them all. Get rid of all of them. And Daniel, he's new in the program. He's kind of fresh in this whole mentorship program. And he steps in. He hears this. And he goes, whoa, I need to do something right here. And so here's what happens. And Daniel went in and requested the king to appoint him a time that he might show the interpretation to the king, .. It's very important what happens. We go on to next verse 19. Then the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision of the night. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. See, Daniel, he was connected to God. He's connected to the truth of God. And don't miss this. There's the order of events right here is so important of what happens right here. He goes to the king's admin assistant. He's like, hey, set me up a time this week. What do you got? Tuesday? Okay, Tuesday it is. I'm going to meet with the king on Tuesday. And then, after he gets the appointment set up, then he goes and trusts that when he meets with the king, God's going to reveal to him the interpretation of the dream. He doesn't know. He doesn't know what the interpretation is before he shows up. He has just enough faith to say, I trust my God to tell me more when I need to know more. I mean, the Chaldeans are like, that's impossible. But he commits and he tells the dream. Now it's kind of a crazy story. I mean, this whole story of Daniel is crazy, and I don't have time to get into all the, you know, kind of nuances of the story. We're going to kind of state a 30,000 foot view in terms of what we can get from him. But what I want us to see is Daniel is connected to a power source, right? He's connected to an entity, a person, the one true God that makes things that seem impossible all of a sudden begin to look like a reality. And it has to do with how he's seeking God, with how he's aligning his life, and he becomes more catalytic as a leader. And all of these things allow him to begin to move beyond what he sees as just what he knows, the possible. And one of the ways he does this is he begins incorporating certain things into his life. Second thing we have to do that we can take from Daniel's life is we have to have the right disciplines. Now, I almost didn't use the word discipline because we see discipline, we're like, oh, I hate the disciplines, disciplines, you know. He's talking disciplines this time of year. Well, you know, what's a discipline? A discipline is when I incorporate something into my life that allows me to do tomorrow or the next day what I can't do today, right? This past fall, I was in pretty intense workout program for a number of weeks, which I hadn't been for a while. And I was, during that season, out with my son. We were putting a roof on our playhouse, and it was kind of a windy day, fall, warm day. And we had this half sheet of 4x8 plywood that we're getting ready to put on the roof. And I said, hey, Matt, come help me put this up. So he's on one end, I'm on the other. And we're kind of, you know, it's buffering in the wind. And I get up on the ladder. And finally, it got beyond his reach. I said, hey, let me just hoist it up there. And so I just grabbed it and stuck it up there and nailed it in. And my son goes, how did you do that, Dad? Which is a great moment in the life of a dad, right? When your seventh grade son is like, oh, he's in awe over what you did. And I'm like, how did I do that? Holy cow. Well, it's because I was doing like 250 burpees a week and 250 push-ups. And, you know, I there were things I was doing. I didn't know I was going to have to lift a piece of plywood up, but there were things I was doing that allowed me to do what previously I would have never been able to do. Guess what? If you want to experience something different in 2017, you're going to have to try something different. This is what Daniel does. He's in the beginning of this leadership mentoring program, and the leaders come in, they say, good news, you're going to get all the king's top wine, you're going to get all the best food that the king enjoys. The king wants to inundate you with his culture. And Daniel, he goes, ew, I don't know about that. I'm not sure I can take in everything the king does. And so here's how the story goes. It says, the king assigned them a daily portion of the food that the king ate and of the wine that he drank. They were to be educated for 3 years, and at the end of that time, they were to stand before the king. Verse 8, but Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food or with the wine that he drank. Therefore, he asked the chief of the eunuchs to allow him not to defile himself. And God gave Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the chief of the eunuchs. Now, first, let's just talk about a couple kind of strange things that are kind of weird going on right here. All right, first, you know, many of us don't probably know what a eunuch is. All right, a eunuch is a man without any testicles. All right, you might say he's ballless. All right, just, I mean, it's kind of derogatory, but you might go, ah, he's ballless. Well, you know, it is derogatory, but it is a literal description, but that's not what it means back then. You know, we might say that as like a man who's not a manly man, right? No, if you're a eunuch, you are a manly man. See, if you're a eunuch, man, you have some power. You've got some chutzpah going on with your being, all right? You got some gravitas to your being. And Daniel is high enough now. He's working with the top brass of the Babylonian regime, and that's what a eunuch was. He was one of the top brass. Now, basically, why would somebody be a eunuch? In the ancient world, if you were working your way up a regime, you were not the king, but you were working for the king, eventually you'd get high enough that basically the king would say to you, hey, do you want to continue to climb in my regime? And if you said yes, then you would have to undergo castration as a male. Now, the reason for this was because they wanted to keep down the coups, all right? You couldn't lead a revolt against the king if everyone knew that you could not produce an offspring, all right? Because if there was no princes or princesses coming behind you, you couldn't be a leader. And so this is a strange thing, but it's really important in this story to understand this part, all right? So Daniel comes to this eunuch, all right? So this isn't like some peon in the organization. This is the top brass. This is like the top, one of the top officials in the Babylonian kingdom. And he's saying, look, I understand the king wants me to have some great wine, and he wants me to, you know, eat the food that he eats and all this, but I can't do it. I just can't do it. I'm a Jew. I'm like a very kosher Jew, all right? I mean, unfortunately for Daniel, he is not going to be eating that bacon-wrapped shrimp that I had at Cooper's Hawk the other night, right? He's just not. As awesome as it is, he's like, I'm a Jew. not going to be able to have that. So see, Daniel has different disciplines than what everybody else is doing. And what about the wine? You know, we don't know about the wine. I mean, Jews did great wine. We know that. The king's wine would have been top shelf. So we don't know exactly why, you know, he's turned down the wine. All I'm trying to help us see is that if you want a life that's different, you're going to have disciplines. You have to pin disciplines to your life that are different. I mean, if you don't want to be doing what everybody else is doing, you're going to have to, you know, figure out how to do things that are different than everybody else. I mean, if you don't want your life to look like everybody else's life, you're going to have a calendar that looks different than everybody else's calendar. See, if we want to be different in 2017, last week we said, you know, small changes that are permanent over time lead to the impossible. We're going to have to do different things. This is why I think some of us get frustrated with God sometimes. You know, we're just sitting around waiting for God to do something. We're like, God, I'm just kind of doing what everybody else is doing. I'm not, you know, just kind of existing, just kind of minding my P's and Q's. And it's like we just think being a nice person, God's going to stick a sugar finger in our life and swirl it around like a sugar daddy and like make our life sweet, right? God doesn't work that way. I mean, some of us are probably going, well, gosh, I wish I had the gene, you know, the discipline gene. Kurt, sounds like you got it. Man, you can do burpees and push-ups. Listen, there's no such thing as a gene, you know, a discipline gene. See, we write it off thinking, well, I just didn't get the discipline gene when I was born, right? That's what we say. It's like I saw this post on social media. Don't blame the holidays. You were fat in August. Because we like to say, well, the holidays. No, we can't pin it on the holidays. Right? There's no discipline gene. No discipline gene. 2 Timothy, let's get serious again. We can't have fun in church. That's not fair, right? For God has not given us a spirit of fear and timidity, but of power, of love, and what's that word right there? Of self-discipline. See, the closer you get to God, which is the first thing Daniel does, the more disciplined you're gonna become. You're gonna embrace discipline. God's gonna give you a power to be more disciplined. See, some of us, and you have really great families, and you don't know why you have great families. You're like, man, our family's awesome, and maybe you even kind of accidentally fell into having a great family. But there's probably things you're doing that are allowing you to experience family life that way. You may have said at some point, hey, we don't have money to eat out, so we're gonna eat at home every night, or we're a part of Game Change, and so we gave up eating out, so we're gonna have to eat at home, kids. And you didn't realize how huge of a system that was. Not only is it allowing you to save, but you're gathering every single night around the table, and it's requiring you as a family to sit and talk, to share your day. And that's a huge system, right? You're coming together to talk every single day as a family. And I promise you, your family is tighter as a family than other families who don't do that, right? It's always worked that way. Right? If there's not a regular discipline you're pinning to your life and doing something new, trying something new, you're not going to do anything new. Our lives go as far as our disciplines go. So Daniel, you know, he isn't like disciplining himself, just this like rigid, oh, everything about my life is no fun. No, he sees something where he wants to go and he begins to discipline toward it. And guess what? God honors it. It's almost like God sees his life and says, oh, look at Daniel. There's Daniel. He's wanting something more. And God says, I think I'm going to come along and bring some more power into his life. Because he's putting certain things into his life. See, here's the thing. If you're saying, you know, in 2017, I want to get closer to God, you're going to have to pin a discipline to that. You're going to have to maybe get into reading your Bible every day. Go on to Bible.com and, you know, download put your name in and your email so it'll send you the verse of the day and a little devotional with it. You know, you're going to have to get connected relationally. You know, maybe if you're not in a group, it's, you know, getting in a Life Together group or a community group that we have starting up. You know, women, we've got some really cool things coming for women here at Crosspoint. We got some cool men's things happening, but there's some cool things happening for women. Just be on the lookout for those. We have the men's breakfast that's going to be happening for men next Saturday morning at 7 o'clock right here at Crosspoint. And if you're a man and you're not connected in a group at all here at Crosspoint, come join us for this. I'm going to be there and be sharing about some of the cool things happening over these next few months, but I just think it's really going to grow men. And so you can sign up to participate in that in the app or mark it on your card. If you're in newbie mode, if you've been in newbie mode and you're like, you know, I'm kind of checking out God and I've been exploring, I'm not sure he's any different than Muhammad or, you know, Buddha or whatever, and you want to kind of go to the next place because you've been there for a while, or if you're new in your faith, and you've just, you know, kind of been new for a long time and you need to get to a new place, you need to join the Starting Point group. We love Starting Point. We're always championing Starting Point around here. And I had to ask myself, why do I love Starting Point? Well, you know, I taught the class. It's an 8-week class. I taught it the very first time we did it. And it was an absolutely amazing experience. I was blown away. It was very simple. And yet every time we'd walk out of that class, it was like, whoa, what just happened there? Something really cool that happened with the class. And all you do is, you know, read a little bit and reflect on a couple questions, come together, talk about your experiences. And yet there's something powerful that happens. And then I figured it out. I realized there's nothing magical about the content, but what happens is people that are in that class are people that are saying, you know, I want to go to the next place. I want to get out of where I am and go to a new place spiritually. And I think God sees that and he goes, ooh, ooh, ooh. There's some people that are just looking to move to a new place. I'm going to bring some extra power into that experience right there. I think God does that. I think God sees that. And listen, I'm not telling you what you should or shouldn't do. I'm just saying, you know, you've got to get beyond what you're currently doing. Now, Daniel, he's actually not just, you know, building into disciplines, but he also has to begin to resist some of the negative things that are being thrust into his life. All right? And we're going to look at this a little further next weekend in terms of how to get up when we're knocked down and keep pursuing the thing we're going after. But in this case for today, Daniel, what's unique about him is he's having to fend off what I want to call lies. There are lies that this mentoring program is trying to infuse him with about who he is, and they're telling him things that aren't true about himself. All right? Now, Daniel's very successful, and one of the reasons we know this is because he lasts through multiple kings in the Babylonian Empire. So he stays in his position, even as the king changes. In fact, here's a new ruler that's writing, and here's his perspective in chapter 4. It says, "At last Daniel came in before me, he who was named Belteshazzar, after the name of my God, and in whom is the spirit of the holy gods, and I told him the dream." So this is another king, and they've changed Daniel's name to Belteshazzar. There's another king who says, "Hey, Daniel, I want you to interpret my dream. I heard you've done this phenomenally for past leaders." Saying, "O Belteshazzar, chief of the magicians, because I know that the spirit of the holy gods is in you and that no mystery is too difficult for you, tell me the visions of my dream that I saw and their interpretation." Now, this king right here is being totally complimentary to Daniel. All right, he's totally saying, "Hey, Daniel, you know, the spirit of the holy gods are in you." All right, and Daniel takes that as a compliment, but it's actually a lie. Because see, Daniel knows there's not multiple gods. The Babylonians believe there are multiple gods. And he's saying, "These multiple gods are in you, Daniel." Daniel goes, no. "I know there's one true God. There's one true God, and these are actually lies that you're saying to me about his identity." Saw a fascinating story Christmas Day, a couple weeks ago on Christmas Day. It was on NFL Today, kind of the pre-show to, you know, Sunday NFL games, which I never get to see, by the way, because it's like happening right now, you know. And so it was Christmas Day. Of course, we didn't have services, and it was mid-afternoon, so we turn on football, and this story comes on, and I was blown away. It's a story of Ryan Leaf. Anybody remember Ryan Leaf, out of curiosity? A few of you? Okay. So in case you don't know Ryan Leaf, he's known for being the second draft pick in the 1998 NFL draft behind Peyton Manning. And the big tension in that draft was, you know, for the Colts even, do you go with Ryan Leaf or do you go with Peyton Manning? Well, Peyton Manning worked out pretty well for us, right? And if you know anything about Ryan Leaf, he kind of ended in a downward spiral. And yet what was so cool about this story was the backstory of him getting clear on his identity. Take a look at it.
I was making $5 million a year playing professional football and what I thought was my dream, and I was miserable. So I just kind of spiraled out of control.
Quarterback Ryan Leaf was arrested again today.
Charges of felony burglary, criminal possession of dangerous drugs.
And I spent the next 32 months in prison. I know what the depression and the hopelessness feels like. I know what that feels like because I was right in it. The prison, the negative press, it's just a piece of life I had to get through. I'm so glad I didn't kill myself.
Ryan's NFL career crashed hard, and there was no leeway. Instead, just hate and resentment. So much so, he ran back home to Great Falls, Montana, to do what we all asked him to do. Quit, hide, just go away.
I felt like my career was a failure. I mean, I went to my lake house in Montana. I would collect as many pills as I could, and I'd disappear for like 3 months. So I started looking up open houses on Sundays. You know, 9 times out of 10, I'd find a medicine cabinet or a cabinet in the kitchen that had pain pills.
Cops kind of found out about it and came over to his house and arrested him. I was there when that happened. That was probably the worst moment of my life when I did that.
He hated the name Ryan Leaf as much as the rest of the world, so he tried to leave it by attempting suicide. That failed, so instead he was content spending his life alone in a cell.
I remember sending him a letter. His letter back to me was, "Stop writing me. Just leave me alone."
I only went outside twice in 32 months while in prison. Really? By choice.
Why?
I mean, I was as self-loathing as you could have gotten. I think it wasn't until like the 28th month of those 32 months that I finally flipped the switch.
What happened? Why 28 months in?
My roommate. One day he just tore into me about how I didn't understand the value I had and what I could do when I got out of here, because Brian, you are going to get out of here at some point. He suggested I start going down and helping prisoners who didn't know how to read learn how to read.
And with that, Ryan had an awakening. There was no more hate. It was just time to help. He took a job as a driver for Transcend, a recovery community.
Ryan literally was willing to do whatever it took. He was willing to start from the bottom.
It's like a big brother thing. You're just trying to help somebody along who is going through a difficult time.
How many eggs do you want? Like 17?
And you understand that because you went through the same difficult time.
I was making 15 bucks an hour driving you guys around.
Yeah. He was a big brother. He was a crucial member of my early support group when I was in my most fragile time. You know you
might surprise. Far more important than touchdowns, Ryan's now leading people through a different tunnel, committing his time to helping veterans and those struggling with mental health and addiction.
It's harder to ask for help. It's harder to do the healthy thing. But when you do and you do the next right thing, good things happen for everybody.
His goals aren't winning Super Bowls. It's making a huge difference in very troubled people's lives.
To me, this is much harder than what he did as an athlete. This is way harder. I'm just proud of what he's doing right now.
And I never want to see another peer of mine not be around because they didn't feel like they were worth it.
And there's a lot of people here because of you.
Well, I'm here because of a lot of people.
One of the greatest movies of all time, It's a Wonderful Life, about George Bailey. What would happen if he followed through and took his own life? Hold your wrist up for me. If you would hit that artery the right way, where would everybody's life be different?
It's unmeasurable. I don't have any idea what it would have done to my family. But, I mean, I don't know. People tell me the impact I'm having, but let's put it this way, it wouldn't have been right.
Man, how cool is that? Isn't that a cool story? You know, right after they showed that, they said, you know, had Ryan Leaf pursued the identity and success of Peyton Manning, there are hundreds, thousands of people who may not even be on this earth today. Because he was chasing an identity that wasn't really who he was. Third thing we see in Daniel's life is we have to resist the lies and lean into your true identity. You know, for Daniel, I mean, his training program was to change his name. What's this Belteshazzar thing? Well, that became his new name. That was his new name. This mentorship program. This is what, you know, people do all the time when they put slaves in bondage. Right? You know, when America was, you know, stealing slaves from Africa to come up here and work in America, they're changing their names. They're saying, this is no longer who you are. You're no longer the name of your parents gave you. I mean, that terrible moment in our nation's history, they changed the name, gave them a whole new identity so they would begin to believe that that's all they were. And it's a lie. And so these names that are attached to these figures in Daniel's story, it's to control them, to make them become who they want them to be, not who God created them to be. And so when we live out an identity that is not true to who God created us to be, listen, there is no amount of success or failure that can ever overcome that lie. Here's what happens with Daniel. It says, and the chief of the eunuchs gave them names. Daniel, he called Belteshazzar. Hananiah called Shadrach, Mishael he called Meshach, and Azariah he called Abednego. You've heard those names before, right? Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. Even if you've not been in church, these are like catchphrases in our culture. These are not their names. These are lies. This is not their identity. These are not the names their parents gave them. And if we peel back the veneer a bit, we begin to see how sinister these names really are. In fact, take a look at Daniel. Daniel means God is our judge. That's what his parents called him. God is our judge, and they renamed him Belteshazzar, which means Lady Protect the King. What's up with that? It changes gender, right? I mean, listen. Seriously, gender confusion is one of the major strategies of the enemy today. Right? He uses this over and over again to try to believe something about ourselves that we're not. Here's the thing. If you have failure in your life and you have some unsavory moment that you just can't seem to get out from under, I mean, if you feel like, man, I'm just a bad person, And there's no way God could ever use my life. I mean, if you spiritually cannot get out from under that, that's a lie. That's a lie that owns you. Right? That's like this chain that comes and just goes around your neck and it begins to weigh you down and prevents you from achieving the things God created you to do. Right? If you think, man, I've messed up way too much for God to ever work in my life. Why do you think that? But if you believe that that is now a part of your identity, it's a chain that is just bounding you. If you think, man, my life is just a failure. I mean, I failed once, and because of that, man, I'm just a failure. Everybody sees me as a failure. If you've assumed that as your identity, why would you think that? But if you've assumed that, then it's like a chain that is just bounding you to the here and the now. I mean, if you think, you know, I'm just like my dad, you know, and he was always negative, or I'm just like my mom and she was promiscuous. You know, why do you think that? But if that's an identity that you've assumed, then it's something that just keeps weighing you down. I mean, see, the point is your parents, they named you something. They gave you a name, and it may not have had any deep meaning. I mean, it may just be something that's on your birth certificate. But I want you to ask yourself, what's the identity that I've assumed that's preventing me from being the person God created me to be? What's that identity? Have you assumed an identity? Have you taken on beliefs about yourself because of something that's happened or you've done or that's been done to you? See, Daniel's not Belteshazzar. It's a lie, and he has to resist that. He has to resist it. See, your identity, the identity, what you believe about yourself will dictate where you go in 2017. You know, one of the most powerful things that happens in all of human history is years later, thousands of years later, when Jesus emerges on the scene, he lays low, that we celebrate at Christmas. He lives his life, and eventually he goes to a cross. And he goes for the cross. I mean, as he spreads himself out on that cross, as he lays his life down on that cross, and he spreads his arm, he does it to shed those identities. And he says, those are not your identities. He comes to break the bondage of the things that are weighing us down so that we can get to the impossible. Later, years later, take a look at what God says of Daniel. He says, oh, Daniel, man greatly loved. He says, oh, Daniel, you're a man. And Daniel believed this. Daniel knew this. Daniel knew he was chosen by God. He knew that his identity was not Belteshazzar. It wasn't anything that the mentorship was trying to infuse on him or put on him. He knew his identity. His identity was in a God who chose him. A God who chooses every single one of us. So I want us to do something together out loud. In fact, before we do that, you know, you've got some next steps on the back of your connection card, which we have every single week. And I encourage you to think through, you know, do I need to pin a discipline? You know, maybe it's just returning next week for you. Maybe you're just new and you're like, man, I'm just getting back into church. And it's just, or inviting somebody to game day at Cross Point. Or maybe there's a lie that you just was on the front of your mind that you say, you know, I've assumed this identity. I've assumed this identity. And I need to get out from under it. Well, it starts with identifying who we are in Christ. And so I want us to just put our name in here, and we're going to start with you, man. I want you to say this out loud with me. And of course, we don't ever want you to do something you don't want to do, but I think there's something very healthy when we, with our words, say something that we want to become so. That's one of the things of making something happen is when we say it out loud. So, man, just say this out loud with your name in the blank. Here we go. Oh, Kurt, man greatly loved. Let's say it again, man. Oh, Kurt, man greatly loved. Women, I want you to do the same thing. I want you to look up there and I want you to insert your name. Here we go. Oh, woman greatly loved. Say it again. Oh, woman greatly loved. Heavenly Father, I believe you're doing something in our hearts right now. And God, I just pray that you would help us to see ourselves as your chosen child, as your chosen son, your chosen daughter. And God, if there are identities around us that are keeping us where we are, that are not in line with who you created us to be, God, I pray that you would break the chains and the bondage that those are creating in our lives right now. God, I just pray that you break them, that your power would help us to get out from under that so we can begin to get from the possible to the impossible. God, I pray that you help us to know what to do with what we've just heard this morning. Just help us to know how to walk it out. And Father, if there's anyone in here this morning who is maybe just being warmed for the very first time to you, maybe has never taken a step and received you, just said yes to you and began a relationship with you that right now says, I want to be that man or woman of God. I want to be a chosen child of God. It can happen right now. And so God, I just pray that that's where we are, we'd say yes. So God, I want you to come into my life. I receive you. I receive your grace. Would you forgive me? Would you fill me, God? Would you remove the bondage of those identities that I've taken on in my past? Would you just take them away and give me all of you? God, I just pray that you heal, that you bring a healing. A healing, God. You have the power to bring a healing to my broken places. Amen. Amen. Tell you what, I think there's some identities being changed this morning. Isn't that exciting? All right, yeah, that's exciting. Well, hey, let's go ahead and stand. Let's stand to our feet, and we're going to root ourselves before we go in this identity of being chosen by God. If you believe it or don't believe it, we're going to root ourselves as we sing this together.